From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. At first, when you see Stephen Cantor's new film about the ballet dancing sensation Sergei Polunin, you think dancing was always his dream. He's quickly identified as gifted, and we see him progress over time. 9 years old, 15 years old. At 19, he becomes principal dancer with the Royal Ballet in London. Amazing. But in the film, Cantor shows us the costs of Sergei's rise. To his family, his personal freedom, he begins to act out, and at the height of his fame, he quits. And you begin to wonder if dancing was Sergei Polunin's dream or someone else's. Today in the program, we're continuing our documentary film series. Next week, we're screening Stephen Cantor's film called Dancer. He's with us today to talk about it after the news.
Support for Radio West comes from thousands of sustainers, listeners just like you who give ongoing monthly donations to help pay for the public radio shows they rely on. Show your love for Radio West by becoming a sustainer, starting at just $5 a month at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. When we first meet Sergei Polunin in Stephen Cantor's new film, the dancer comes across as brilliant but conceited and temperamental. And he has a reason to be smug. He is one of his generation's most gifted ballet dancers, after all. At 19, he becomes principal dancer with London's Royal Ballet. But Cantor explores the complicated motivations that took Polunin to the height of his fame and made him crack. Polunin stunned the dancing world when he abruptly quit the Royal Ballet. And the film is about the real cost to devoting your life to something and what happens when the motivation shifts. As one of Polunin's friends puts it in the film, when you lose the reason for having a life goal, it's going to end badly. We're continuing our documentary film series today, talking about Stephen Cantor's film. It's called Dancer. We're screening it next week. We'll give you details about that a little bit later on the program. Cantor has directed and produced a number of documentary films, including Chasing Tyson and The Devil's Playground. He's joining us today from a studio in New York City. And Stephen Cantor, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I guess I want to begin, before we talk about how you came to the subject, by just having you describe Sergei Polunin's gift, like as a dancer. But you put his talent in perspective for us, if you would.
I'm not so sure I think of it as a gift. I think a lot of our supremely talented performers, whether it be athletes or musicians or you name it, I think a lot of it is more dedication and hard work and just sheer diligence and putting in the hours and working your butt off to get to a place that is beyond anyone's expectations or even beyond your own expectations.
It is interesting. There's that moment where his mother mentions how when he was born, the nurse discovered how incredibly flexible he was. So he had this natural inclination, but as you say, he wasn't born brilliant as a dancer. He had to get there through just a ridiculous amount of work.
Yeah, I mean, I think flexibility. My daughter is actually a dancer, and flexibility is certainly a big component of dance. But there's so much, obviously, so much more to it. He's not leaping over buildings because he's flexible. I mean, it's just hours and hours of dedication and sacrifice.
Besides the flexibility, what's the thing that made him good, the thing that he earned through all that work? Like, it seems like he's got this incredible vertical leap. He was amazing. I mean, still thought of, I suppose, as one of the greatest of his generation. What made him good? I mean, beyond the work part, obviously.
First of all, he's only 26, so I think he's kind of still in his prime.
Yeah, right.
He's had quite a life by the age of 26. You know, most of us are graduating college and sort of meandering through our first job, and he's already, like, traveled around the world and been raised in different countries and learned languages and become the youngest principal at a ballet company, quit the ballet company, went to Russia, made a huge viral video. You know, it's quite an insane circus he's been on to just still be 26.
When did you first learn of this story?
The producer of the film, Gabby Tanna, knew Sergei from his time in London at the Royal Ballet. He's an extremely well-known celebrity in London. He can't walk down the street without signing autographs and taking pictures. I think the Take Me to Church video sort of helped bring him here a little bit, but not fully. But he's very well-known both in Russia and in the UK.
And when the story came to you, what did you think it was going to be about? Like, when you're working through we'll explore this a little bit more as we go, but what do you figure it's about? Because it seems like one of the themes of the film is that idea of, you know, the pursuit of being great, of being perfect, becomes, as someone puts it in the film, kind of a detriment to everything else they do in their life. So just talk to me a little bit about what you were thinking this was going to be about when you took it on.
I mean, it's funny, when you go into a documentary, usually you don't know exactly what it's going to be. And in this case, there was this kid. When we met him, he was 22, 23, and he had a bad reputation. He was known as the bad boy of ballet. He was not welcome at most companies around the world. And we met him, and I thought it was going to be a film about this, you know, renegade James Dean crazy guy. And what we met was a very kind of gentle, soft-spoken, sweet kid who I'm sure had his moments during dancing of being a little brash, but he never missed rehearsals. I never heard a single unprofessional thing about him. And he was kind of at a crossroads of trying to navigate his way forward now with a messed up reputation that was probably largely undeserved at a young age. And so I just thought it was going to be an interesting journey to follow him and see where things went.
Are you interested in those kind of rosebud moments of a character, like the effect of those small, simple things in the early part of their life that seems to sort of come out later? Because it seems like that's one of the things that happens in this film.
Yeah, I do actually think that. We did actually reference that in the edit room. I think when he was young, I think he had a tremendous passion for... I literally said, we're making Citizen Kane the documentary, to my editor.
Wow.
So that's a very astute observation. But yeah, he's not that this film is Citizen Kane or anything, but it's the same theme of trying to recover this childhood spark and love and passion that you had, even if it's something so small as a sled. In Sergei's case, he just loved being a kid and being playful and not having all this pressure and intense scrutiny on him.
Let's talk about his upbringing as it plays out. Because this is obviously key to understanding the story. He's born in Kherson, southern Ukraine. Everyone's pretty much poor, so he says he doesn't really feel out of place. And as you say, he had a really great childhood. He loved it, at least in the early days.
I think he just didn't know any better. I think that's what he says in the film. I think everybody in Kherson is poor. It's a very blue-collar, rough, cold Russian-Ukrainian town. And I think he was a kid, and he was playing with his friends, and all his friends were kind of the same. And life was easy. His parents were still together. He had a family. You know, he was just being a kid.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that there are, he has these, and we'll talk about his mother and his father, but he has a mother and father, and he also has these figures that appear in his life that become one becomes a father figure, one is kind of a mother figure. It was his first dancing teacher. Would you say something about that, just that he has... It's like he has his parents, but he also has these figures who play the role of his parents, and that seems like a theme in his life in some way.
I think that's true, but I don't think that's abnormal. I think Sergei, because his parents made this huge sacrifice, I mean, basically, Sergei's family sacrificed everything for his dance career. He was their great hope, and they sacrificed everything, including their relationship with him and their relationship with each other. They moved around the world to make money to send it back to the mom so she could support his dance. And that's a crazy, incredible sacrifice to make that obviously had a big effect on Sergei. So I think that probably left some holes in his life in terms of parental figures, and I'm sure he needed his teachers and friends and coaches to fulfill.
Yeah. There's another element in the film I wanted to ask you about. I want to play a clip first. This is Sergei talking about how ballet gives a structure, gives direction for dance, but it also, as he puts it, puts a restriction on the dancing. Let's play this moment from the film, and I want to ask you about it.
When I dance, I don't think how I dance. It's who I am. Ballet is just putting the restriction on the dance, you know, like some directions to it. But I dance, that's just how I, you know, how I feel, how my body moves. And when you take off and you hover in the air and your body lets you do that, you know, these couple of seconds, it's worth like dancing for.
It seems like he feels this idea of personal freedom is, seemed to me anyway, to be a theme in the film, that he loves dancing, I guess, in some ways, but also he feels restricted by it, doesn't want to be restrained. Would you talk about that?
I mean, I think ballet in general, I think, is exactly what he said. I think it puts restrictions. It says you have to step here and do this movement here, and then on this beat you do a leap, and then you grab the woman and you spin her around. It's, you know, it's a, the choreography is restricting your ability to express yourself completely freely. But I think the great dancers, which I think Sergei is one of them, find a way to transcend that, and I think that's what he's saying in that piece, that he's able to still do the steps but still bring something of himself to it. And if you ever see a great dancer, sometimes, you know, there's ballerinas who really flirt with the audience and just make you feel so much a part of the performance. And there's other ones that are great technicians, but you don't feel that same emotional connection. And I think he's very good at establishing that emotional connection. I think that's part of why he's so popular.
One of the things he sort of has a problem with is recreational drug use at his time in the Royal Ballet. And you sort of deal with that in a really candid way. I'm wondering if you thought on some level that this idea of freedom hovering in the air, as he says, is part of that high that he seems to be chasing, that moment of elation and euphoria, that he seems to be chasing that high in some parts of his life.
I think that's probably right. Probably as you get older, it's harder and harder on your body to achieve what you were doing when you were 18, 19. And you make up for it with experience, but he probably still wants to get to the level of physicality he was at when he was younger. I also think he was, when he was doing the recreational drugs at the Royal Ballet, he was 20, 21.
Yeah.
You know, he was a kid. He was in college. Think of what you were doing in college.
I wanted to ask you about the intense pressure that he's under, that you really reveal in the film. It's interesting to hear him say in the film that when he, so basically his family decide, they make this really crucial decision. And it seems kind of a turning point. In order for Sergei to kind of live up to his talent, his parents realize that we're going to have to get out of this small town in Ukraine, and they move to Kiev, where there's this kind of expensive dance school. So paying for his tuition, as you sort of mentioned earlier, his father went in one direction, went to Portugal to find work, and his grandmother goes in another direction. She goes to Greece, and as you said, they send it all back send it all back home. And it's interesting to hear him say that when he went to that school in Kiev, when his father went to work out of the country and his grandmother too, that that's when the fun was over. Would you talk a little bit about the sense of intense pressure that he's really under? I mean, driven by his mother's sense of regret, driven by his parents' sacrifice? Because that seems like an important part of the film, that idea of the pressure that's on this really, really young kid.
Yep, I think you just nailed it, actually. I think he was 9, 10 years old and moved out of his hometown, moved to Kiev, which is a big city, probably a scary place. And he was given a pretty explicit message from his parents that their well-being and their ability to pay bills and to eat and potentially to get back together and remain a family was on his 10-year-old shoulders. That was a pretty clear message, because the father was not doing, you know, incredible jobs. He was doing menial labor in Portugal. The grandmother was a housekeeper in Greece. Galina, his mother, mm-hmm. was, you know, trying to find odd jobs here and there just to make ends meet in Kiev, and shuttling him back and forth to his rehearsals. And here was this kid with the weight of the world on his shoulders, and all of a sudden ballet, I think, started to become a job. Became something he had to work at. It stopped being fun at that point.
Let me play another moment from the film. We'll hear Sergei here in this clip, and also his friend Valentino Zucchetti. Valentino we'll hear first, but Sergei in this particular point talking about how his dancing became a way in some ways, as he says, to get his family back. Here's another clip from the film Dancer.
I used to call him the graceful beast or something like this, because he's sort of like a lion, you know, the way he tackles a step, but then as soon as the step is airborne, it's just so in control and clean and pure, which is a really rare mix. He was always in the studio right until the school closed. He was really dedicated.
I would do ballet class twice more than normal kids because I knew that's my chance to get my family back together. And I knew if I'm going to mess it up, they're going to just send me home.
Big thanks to Chris Martin from Coldplay for letting us use that song.
I was going to ask you about that.
In the documentary.
The music's a really important part. It really drives it, and it's such an interesting contrast. I mean, you have Coldplay on one hand, and then obviously classical music. And would you talk about the way you thought about music? Because, I mean, the idea of him being driven and being rebellious, that music contrasts with the classical music that's in some of the ballet performances.
Yeah, I think he's kind of when you look at him, he's got tattoos and he's, you know, got kind of a tougher image than you would expect from a ballet dancer. And I think he's a little bit of a sort of rock and roll renegade. He's got James Dean tattooed on his shoulder.
Right.
He's friends with Mickey Rourke. And I think I have a little bit of a rock and roll sort of backstory, you know, film about the Pixies and made one with Willie Nelson. So I think we just kind of decided we'd make a rock and roll ballet film. Seemed to suit him, and you know, the classical ballet films have been made with the classical scores.
Yeah.
So we just thought we'd shake it up a little.
Stephen Cantor, he directed the documentary film Dancer, which we're screening next Wednesday evening at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. It's part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Cantor is going to be with us for a Q&A after the film. We have details about all of that on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER.
Guido per il mare luce e tira forte il vento su una vecchia terrazza.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're continuing our documentary series with a film about Sergei Polunin. He's one of the most gifted ballet dancers of his generation. At 19, becomes principal dancer at London's Royal Ballet, and then he quits. We had some technical problems on yesterday's program, so today we're broadcasting our conversation with the filmmaker Stephen Cantor. He directed the film. We're screening Dancer next week. We will give you some details about that a little bit later on the program.
We were talking about the film you made, the 30 for 30 film for ESPN, Chasing Tyson. And it's interesting, we were talking off the air. You said that you were basically working on these two films at the same time, going back and forth between edit rooms. And in some ways, they have similar themes. I don't know. Would you just say something about that? It's interesting to hear you compare those two.
Yeah, I think in a way it was kind of schizophrenic going from editing a boxing movie to editing a ballet movie, and I was going from one room to the next. They were literally right next door to each other. So in a way, it was kind of schizophrenic to have such a tough, gritty, you know, a guy biting another guy's ear off movie, and then going to this gentle classical ballet dancer. But on another level, they were very similar, because I think, first of all, they're both very human stories about people growing up in extreme poverty, and through sheer force of will and through finding one skill and pursuing it with their absolute, you know, hearts set on becoming the greatest, they figure out a way to transcend their tough upbringing from an economic standpoint. So I think those themes were strangely similar. I mean, the backstory of Evander and the backstory of Sergei really did collide.
Yeah. We were talking about the film you made, the 30 for 30 film for ESPN, Chasing Tyson. And it's interesting, we were talking off the air. You said that you were basically working on these two films at the same time, going back and forth between edit rooms. And in some ways, they have similar themes. I don't know. Would you just say something about that? It's interesting to hear you compare those two.
Yeah, I think in a way, it was kind of schizophrenic going from editing a boxing movie to editing a ballet movie. And I was going from one room to the next. They were literally right next door to each other. So in a way, it was kind of schizophrenic to have such a tough, gritty, you know, a guy biting another guy's ear off movie.
Yeah.
And then going to this gentle classical ballet dancer. But on another level, they were very similar, because I think, first of all, they're both very human stories about people growing up in extreme poverty, and through sheer force of will and through finding one skill and pursuing it with their absolute, you know, hearts set on becoming the greatest, they figure out a way to transcend their tough upbringing from an economic standpoint. So I think those themes were strangely similar. I mean, the backstory of Evander and the backstory of Sergei really did collide.
Yeah. What did you notice following Evander telling his story, Evander Holyfield and Sergei, about in terms of the way they were adored? And it seems like the idea of fame, I wonder if you think about the idea of fame and how that affects a person's chasing after fame, chasing after your legacy. Event. That's what Evander's story was about in Chasing Tyson. What do you figure you've learned about fame over the years doing these films?
I don't think either Evander or Sergei was pursuing fame. I think they had goals of more financial and more individual success. Probably celebrity was some component of that. I think in Evander's case, he had the goal to be heavyweight champion and to earn the respect of the world. And for some reason, even to this day, Mike Tyson just sucked all the air out of the room, and Evander could never get the appreciation and respect he deserved. So becoming heavyweight champion and beating Tyson and then beating him again, and he's the one who got his ear bitten, and he's the one who won both fights. And still, if you ask people who's a better fighter, Mike Tyson or Holyfield, people would say Tyson. Most people. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And Tyson actually never really beat any great fighters. And Evander beat them all. And was heavyweight champion 4 or 5 times. And in Sergei's case, I think he had the goal to become a principal at the Royal Ballet. And he started at the Royal Ballet School when he was 12. And that was his goal. And he worked harder than any other student at that school. He took double ballet classes, and he was in the studio, the last person there, closing it down every night, trying to become a principal. And sure enough, he became the youngest principal in the history of the company. And here he was now, not earning very much money, not above the title in the posters. He was still a member of the company. And it wasn't creating other opportunities for him, and he was performing the same roles year after year. And I think he was just kind of not what he, what it was built up to in his mind.
Yeah.
I think he had this goal and it ended up to be sort of a hollow experience for him. He was this, you know, wanted this excitement and adventure and probably some celebrity and fame and fortune, and it was just not coming in the ballet world.
I want to ask you about his his reaction to his mother and father getting divorced. What effect that had on him. Let's play another moment from the film, and then we can talk about it.
One of the most important things is family. And by doing ballet, I hope I would bring them more and more together. But I wasn't able to bring them together. I wasn't able to make everything fine and good. And there was, you know, I was so upset that I was like, I'm never going to be upset again, and I never will feel sorry for anybody. I will never miss anybody. And I don't want any memories about anything. And that was the last time I cried for years.
That's obviously not the most healthy way to deal with the psychological stresses.
Yeah.
By shutting himself off.
But it's so interesting, and I think this is what the film does. You get that, we get the initial sort of superficial sense of what a lot of people must have thought of Sergei Polunin, that he was this kind of brat who was a genius, but sort of did what he wanted. He was temperamental and all those kinds of things. And that's our initial sense of it. But then you sort of turn the story on itself, and as you start to dig in as to why he behaves this way, you get a deeper sense of this young man. Would you talk about structuring the film like that and the way you thought about the way you wanted the film to sort of move and progress?
And by the time we started the editing process, it was pretty clear that it was just a film about sacrifice, a family that sacrifices everything and will do whatever it takes to get their kid to the top of his craft, and the kid gets there, and is it worth it? So that became pretty much from week one of the edit process what our conversations were about. I mean, I don't want to sound like an apologist for him or anything. Yeah. I think he does have his complications. But as I said, he may have done recreational drugs. He may have sort of, you know, been on the wrong side of the tracks a few times, but he was completely professional, and he did not get that bad boy reputation until he left the Royal Ballet, and then the media kind of went crazy, because how could anyone leave the principal role at the Royal Ballet? And he was kind of the star who everyone was coming to see, and they sort of created this bad boy of ballet image around him after he left. But one of my favorite scenes in the film is when he's just left the Royal Ballet, and it's in the middle of winter, and he comes home, and he's with his girlfriend and his friend, and they take out their cameras, and he says, okay, you need to film me. And he runs down the street, takes off his clothes, gets completely naked, and lies down in a snowy street and makes a snow angel.
Yeah.
And his friend says that was the moment he was finally free, and that was just such an expression of freedom. To me, it was more about that. Just, he was just, you know, from the age of four, pushed and pushed and pushed, and the weight of the world was on his shoulders. And I think he just, you know, just cracked, just didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah. What were the interviews like with him? What was the, did you have to soften him up? Did he trust you at first? I mean, what was that relationship like?
I think we didn't really treat them as interviews. We treated them much more as conversations, mm-hmm. not unlike this, where I was saying things and he was saying things, and it became a very, I think, he would say it was a very kind of profoundly cathartic experience, almost like going through therapy or something. Not that I'm a trained therapist, but I asked him very difficult, deep questions that he hadn't really considered before. And I think there were times that he cried and times that he revealed things that he hadn't even thought of. And I think it did make us closer and did make him trust me and think of me as a friend, and same for me towards him.
Yeah.
But considering that there's probably about maybe 10 or 12 minutes of interviews in the film. We probably talked for 20 hours or something, 30 wow. hours.
So you think of him as a friend?
I think so now, yeah. I mean, we've spent a lot of time together. And yeah, when you make a film about someone, it becomes a very intimate experience. I know there's all these documentary purists from the old days who say you should just be a fly on the wall and not get involved, but I don't really prescribe to that school. I get pretty involved.
I wanted to ask you about tattoos. It wasn't a major part of the film, but I thought it was pretty fascinating the way, like his father says in the film sort of offhandedly to you at some point that when he learned that Sergei had gotten these tattoos that he, that he almost passed out, I think, or something.
Well, you know, parents are more conservative and the ballet world is more conservative. And Sergei's tattoos are pretty radical. They're pretty crazy.
Yeah.
He's got all kinds of crazy designs and misspelled words and phrases. It's crazy. I mean, his tattoos are bonkers.
Yeah. Which shows how kind of, I don't know, joyful or impulsive he is as a human being in some ways. And but I did find it interesting, as you said, that it's such an interesting contrast to the really staid kind of conventional world of ballet that a ballet dancer would, you know, put these things on their bodies. And he was, I don't know, did you see it as an act of rebellion or just sort of impulse?
Probably an act of rebellion. Yeah. I think it was probably part of the ballet is restrictive and he just wanted to express himself and that was the way he could do it. Little by little, and now it's become almost an addiction. He really loves it. And thinks of his body as a canvas and just keeps wanting to get more and more. He's dating a great, probably arguably the best female ballerina of this generation is now his girlfriend. Her name's Natalia Osipova and he just got her name on his knuckles.
There's a question that came up. Why didn't he? I mean, he's come to the United States now. Did he think about dancing in the United States? I mean, if he's, that rock star persona seems to have that would have been a pretty good fit in the United States. Why wasn't that? Why didn't he come sooner? I guess.
I think when he left the Royal, that was his goal, was to get here. And I think the bad boy reputation, I don't think he's the greatest communicator. I think, you know, he probably didn't return some emails and some phone calls in a timely enough fashion from some very important people in the American ballet world. And I think he just sort of unwittingly aggravated the wrong people and just never got invited here.
Yeah.
And people were afraid, the drugs and the bad boy of ballet, and is it worth the risk, and what if he doesn't show up for a performance, which never would have happened, but his reputation kind of preceded him and prevented him from being here. But I think now, especially with this film coming out, I think his celebrity will transcend any resistance.
Yeah.
Stephen Cantor. He directed the new documentary film Dancer, which we're screening next Wednesday night at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. This is all part of our Through the Lens documentary series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Cantor's going to be in Salt Lake in person for the Q&A after the film. We get started at 7 o'clock. You can get all of the details on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll take a break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now to our conversation with filmmaker Stephen Cantor. He directed the new documentary film Dancer, which we're screening next Wednesday night. We'll give you the details about that a little bit later on the program.
I want to play another moment in the film because I want to ask you about the way you created this section. I mean, when we see we're seeing this dance play out. He's in Russia. And he has to, as he says, it's another world. Russia is a different world from the West, and so he sort of has to make a name for himself. But then we start to see from the wings, we see him catching his breath, we follow his body, we see his feet. And it seems like the process becomes, rather than just sort of joyous, it becomes kind of tedious in some ways. And I wanted to play this moment. We hear his friends here in this clip, Valentino and Jade Hale Christofi, they're talking about how it in some ways became physically wearing and in some ways tedious. Let me play this moment and we can talk about it.
Ballet is tedious and it's deteriorating. Ballet requires a lot of motivation and discipline, and I think he lost that.
You finish your training, you're 19 years old. You started when you were like 4 or 5, and the time it's finished and the time you've got a second to like step back and look at your life, your whole entire childhood's gone. You can't really do anything else because you might get injured. And you put so much time and effort, the time you get to the end, you think, you know what? I'm going to have to go into, you know, be a professional dancer.
The film really builds at this point. You know, we get this sense of tedium and the sense of frustration. The images of him dancing as a warrior. Would you talk about that, the scene in the film? Because it really builds. It's a really an important moment, I think, in the story.
That was during a performance of Spartacus.
Yeah.
Which was in Russia. I think he on some level wanted to be a star in Russia. I think he had sort of conquered Europe and was not being welcome in the United States, and Russia was like obviously the ballet probably capital of the world. And I think there was some excitement for him about being there and becoming huge and famous and conquering Russia, as his great predecessors, Baryshnikov and Nureyev and all the greats had done. And I think the Russian ballet world was just not up to the level in terms of the backstage, behind-the-scenes treatment of the dancers, even to what the Royal Ballet had been. So I think that probably wore him out a little bit, just not having the dressing room, not having the dressers, not having the food and the care and the water available at every time and having to do most things himself. I think the experience of being in Russia just kind of wore on him a little.
He ends up, there are a couple of scenes where he just ends up kind of on the arm of this chaise lounge in this kind of crappy dressing room. And the way you shoot that, we see his feet and just how, you know, how much work goes into all of this. And it just really seems, rather than, you see behind the art part, you know, you see what kind of effort that goes into something like that. And that was a really interesting part of the film.
Thanks. Yeah. I think that was the point of that, was to just show that, you know, when you see any performance, you're seeing the basketball player fly through the air and dunk, or the ballet dancer leap on stage and, in that case, get stabbed to death as Spartacus. Or I think you're seeing the performance, but you don't really get to know what goes on backstage, behind the scenes, really in a true, you know, documentary sense like that. And the ballet world, they come off stage, they're just flying and smiling and happy, and they get off stage and, you know, it's shocking to see, like, and they grab their legs and they just twisted their ankle, and on stage they completely mask it. And the second they get off stage, bang, they're you know, wiped out. I think that's an incredible part of ballet dancing, to be backstage and experience that from the dancer's point of view.
There's a really kind of powerful moment in the film when Sergei is talking to his mother. And it's like this, I won't say he's interrogating her, but she's defending herself about, it's sort of justifying herself to him about why they sacrificed like this, why they did things like that, why she pushed him to be great. And he says something, and I wanted you to maybe say something about this. He says, "You didn't trust me." Would you talk about that scene? Because did you just happen to capture it? Or, I mean, what was, talk a little bit about that moment.
That was a scene where we wanted Sergei to go home to the place where he lived with his mom in Kiev, where she still lives. And we told him to sit down and have a conversation with her and sort of try to get to the heart of why things happened a certain way. And they were talking in Russian, so we didn't know exactly what they were saying at the time, but we had a feeling that it was turning into a pretty deep conversation. And that shot with one camera, yeah. The guy was hunkered down in the kitchen table, and I think his name is Mark Wolf. It's just one of my favorite shots on the film. You sort of see Sergei's tattooed hand in the foreground and the mother. And I think the mother, Galina, explains to Sergei that he was their hope, and if she was going to do it again, she would not change one thing, because he is out of Kherson and out of Ukraine, and he's now a world-renowned dancer and celebrity and artist. And if she had not pushed him, he would not have worked nearly as hard. He would not be where he is without her pushing, I'm quite certain. He would have been a kid. He would have been playing with his friends. And he would probably be a coal miner in southern Ukraine right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even though there's been a tremendous price to pay, and even though the relationships are fractured, she thinks it's worth it for him to be out and to have opportunities to see the world and explore his craft and not be stuck in some terrible blue-collar job in Ukraine.
And he agrees with her, right? I mean, because you do wonder if he, because he seems to be wondering, was this worth it for me?
I think he's got a little bit of a grass is always greener
complex
going on. I think he thinks, had his parents stayed together and had he had a family and just been allowed to, he would have found his own way to be successful on his own, and it might have allowed the family to stay together. And you know, I think he has this idealized version of what might have happened, but the odds of it happening are not great. You know, Very few of his friends probably managed to get out of Kherson.
Yeah. There's a one of my favorite scenes I found so interesting was near the end of the film with his former dance instructor from southern Ukraine. And it's such an interesting contrast with the conversation with his mother, where he's unsure about how he feels about what she put him through. And he has he's full of fond memories and gratitude for his dance instructor. He seems, you know, just loving. And it's a really nice moment and kind of an interesting contrast. And I just wanted to ask you about that, those two different scenes. I thought that were really interesting.
That's a good question. I think great teachers of kids in any craft or sport or art form find a way of making it incredibly exciting and fun and joyful, and you look forward to your lessons. My daughter is actually a serious ballet dancer, and she loves going to ballet school. She goes 6 days a week, and she loves it every single day. She never one time does not want to go to that school. She's 13 now. Mm. She's actually, I'd say it's coming more internally for her, actually, than it did for Sergei, who I think was pushed a little by his mother. But at a young age, this instructor inspired him. I think she made dancing fun and let him express himself and gave him the opportunity to be free and be childish and play and also learn a craft, which, when you're a kid, you love instructions like that. You love learning things. And I think she was a great teacher for him at the right age.
Let's talk about the video that he makes. He comes to the United States, says he wants to do something new, and he enlists the help of his friend Jade to do choreography for this film, this story that he wants to tell. And the film goes viral. It really becomes kind of a sensation. Would you talk about that, about the what he wants to do with this piece of choreography and ultimately with the film?
Yeah, I think after his time in Russia, which you sort of see come to a head in the Spartacus scene we were talking about, I think he was done. And he was friends with Mickey Rourke and kind of had his heart set on Hollywood and figuring out if he could be an actor. And he was just done with dance. He was burned out. He was tired. He was sick of it. The sacrifice was not worth it. It was too hard on his body. And he wanted to go out in style. David LaChapelle is a friend, and David said he would film a final video, and they selected the song Take Me to Church, and that was going to be Sergei's final performance, and he asked Jade, his best friend, to choreograph it, and they rented a studio in Santa Monica, and for about a week, we filmed and they rehearsed and put together this dance, and they had a lot of intense conversations between the two of them. Jade was not happy about Sergei retiring, but Sergei was pretty dead set on that was the end. This was going to be his final performance. It's never actually come out that was going to be his final performance. When people watch the video, it never says this was going to be his retirement or anything. And then they made the video in Hawaii. David filmed it. And it went extremely viral. And I think even more than the viral is the fan letters that Sergei received, especially from boys saying, you know, I never would have considered dancing. I thought it was gay, but you show me that it's not, that it can be such a great expression. He got a lot of letters to that effect. And I think he realized that this is a gift. His dancing is a gift, and he can share it with the world, and he can inspire kids. And he's probably not going to get that with trying acting at this point, you know, with that accent.
Yeah.
With no acting abilities, he'll be lucky if he could get hired as a, you know, Russian sniper.
Right. In an action film, yeah.
Or he'll make a dance movie or something. So I think the combination of sort of realizing, okay, dance is my thing, and this is my gift, and I can really take it to the next level, and inspiring all these kids, I think that made him reconsider his retirement.
You mentioned he is 26 years old, so still really he's only 26. Does he still have, one of the questions that came to me was just how much of his potential was left unrealized. I mean, he still has, like, how is he thinking about now what he wants next for himself and what he wants to do as a dancer?
Well, strangely, this will tell you how much of a bad boy he was. The Royal Ballet is all over him to come back and do some performances this year, so I think he's going to do that. And I'm sure that this film, even if the film doesn't do well, I'm sure it's going to get his name out there in a much bigger way. I'm sure he'll be here doing guest performances with different companies. I don't think he's going to sign on to be a regular member of a ballet company anytime soon. Possibly he might form his own company.
His grandmother says to him in the film, we see this kind of lovely exchange. She says, when you were young, you loved to dance. You lived for dancing. And it made me think, did he love dance? I mean, it seems like he could have been a gymnast, too. Like, is that the love of his life, dance?
Well, he's too tall to have been a gymnast.
Yeah, okay. So right.
That was out.
Yeah.
I think he loved it when he was young. And when you see his expression on his face in the early, we have a lot of archival footage of his early classes. And the expression on his face is not a kid in pain or disappointed about being there. He's free and leaping around and seems like he loves it. I think when it got to be stand at the bar and lift your leg up and down and up and down and up and down, repeating that over and over and over again, and then doing it again and going home and watching TV and having to do a split while you watch TV. And it became, you know, as you get older, it becomes more serious. In order to get anywhere, it becomes more serious. And I think when it became serious, he lost the enjoyment.
That's the filmmaker Stephen Cantor. Next Wednesday night, we're screening his new documentary film, Dancer, at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center, part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Cantor's going to join us in person for a Q&A after the film. You can get all of the details on our website, radiowest.org. We have technical direction from Tim Slover. Our thanks to Patrick Hubley and the staff of the Utah Film Center. Radio West is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.